Welcome back. This is number two of the podcast series, Fat, Newborns, Infants, and Kids. This is one section of a larger book, Epigenetics in Diet and Health. In this section, I'm going to introduce you to the subject of epigenetics. Epigenetics revolves around the expression of DNA. Most of us are familiar with the DNA double helix. We know that the two sides of the DNA are sometimes separated so that we can use the DNA as a template to make RNA. This RNA then goes into the cell to produce various proteins which enable the cell to function. Although for most of the last 5,000 years, we did not know anything about DNA, yet we were able to figure out how to crossbreed animals and plants to produce the desired outcome. We knew our children may look a little like us, but everyone was different. Despite not knowing how it occurred, we took advantage of our observations and used our knowledge to help control our environment. Mendel came along and quantified some of this knowledge so that the concept of genes was created. This advanced our thinking of hereditary processes, but still no one knew how it occurred. There were still no biochemical or investigational methods available to investigate a cell. This did not matter, as we still were able to use this knowledge to advance our understanding of biology. Watson and Crick identified the DNA molecule, and we have been exploring the various aspects of genetics ever since. Now we know there are 23 pairs of chromosomes containing over 3 billion base pairs. One base pair is one rung of the DNA ladder. We have around 20,000 genes we have identified. The average length is around 10,000 base pairs. Genes only take up about 2% of the DNA. There appears to be a lot more going on. There are about 15 trillion cells in the human body. They all have the same DNA, yet there is great diversity in their appearance and function. If the cell DNA is the same, how come a heart cell does not change into a liver cell? It appears there are many control mechanisms in your body that affect the expression of your DNA. Some appear to be permanent when they appear, others may come and go. I am interested in epigenetics as it pertains to diet and health, and will try to stick to that subject. Speaking of that, I forgot to tell you there are also 100 trillion bacteria in the gut biome. They also undergo epigenetic change that affects your diet and health. These bacteria metabolize the various things you eat and create subsequent chemicals that were not present in your diet. These chemicals can affect the DNA in the gut biome, which contains other bacteria, and also affect the cells of the colon. In addition, these chemicals can also affect the central nervous system. I have written a small ebook on artificial sweeteners, which demonstrates this. Anyway, epigenetic changes in the expression of your DNA revolves around the exposure of the DNA to the environment and the nucleus of the cell. There are continuous biochemical reactions among the cells in your body. These cells exist in a chemical soup of various proteins and nucleotides whose chemical makeup is constantly changing. The cells are exposed to what you eat, what you absorb, the various chemicals in the environment, the various compounds made by other cells, the amount of sunshine, and the various chemicals in the air you breathe. We have been able to discern that methyl groups, that is CH3 groups, added to one of the base pairs in the DNA, that is the cytosine nucleoside, is involved in silencing the DNA, otherwise the genes, following a series of cytosine, guanine, and guanine-cytosine base pairs. When this is present, the gene is not expressed. Although you have giant proteins of DNA in the nucleus of the cell, it still only takes up about 0.3% of the volume of the nucleus. There is a lot of other stuff in there, including various proteins in the cytoplasm soup, which is always changing depending on what the other cells are absorbing from their environment, which is mainly the blood. The other main epigenetic mechanism, which we have identified, is the changes in histone tails. Histones are molecules composed of 8 proteins and look like a disc, really more like a yo-yo. Your giant molecules of DNA are wrapped around these discs about 1.5 times, and then these histones are then coiled around themselves. This is the handy way in which your body stores DNA. If you want to copy a piece of DNA to make RNA, you must uncoil the segment from the histone so you can split the DNA apart and make a template. You can see that if you did not want to allow the segment of DNA to be copied, you could just make it harder to unwrap it from the histone. The histones vary slightly in composition, and they have a string of a few molecules attached to them. These strings are called histone tails. You can attach an acetyl group to one of these molecules in these tails, which can modify the ease or difficulty in unwrapping the DNA, and thus reproducing the segment. These two mechanisms represent epigenetic marks. That is, the changes will be transmitted every time the cells divides. Some stay through your life, and some can come and go. So although you have the same DNA you had when you were born, you have accumulated epigenetic marks on your DNA throughout your life, from the fertilized egg till the end of your life. Depending on the cellular environment, these epigenetic changes control the expression of your DNA. These are not mutations, which are the actual changes in the DNA, which can be inherited, but they do affect how you develop and what you are. We have long known that identical twins have the same DNA, yet as time passes, they begin to demonstrate differences. When the cell divides, the epigenetic marks remain. However, when the cells undergo mitosis, that is, when the germ cells divide, which is when the chromosomes are separated and rearranged, the epigenetic marks are erased, and you start out with a brand new sperm and eggs. Well, I have to admit, this is not exactly true. It ends up that some of these epigenetic marks may escape erasure and be passed on to the offspring. The DNA was not changed, but there were inherited changes in the expression of that DNA. You seem to get 2 chances to erase these marks. First is when the sperm and egg combine to form your DNA. Next is when the sperm and egg have developed from mitosis in the new person, and you get a chance to make unmarked DNA in the sperm and egg. Sometimes the epigenetic marks may escape erasure and continue in the offspring. These marks may be changed during the lifetime of the cell, depending on the environment. A little more about the beginning. Your egg and sperm combine to form a zygote. It then begins splitting, but not growing, in other words, not getting any larger, and this is called cleavage. When you get to about 32 cells, we call this a morula. Just before this, we can remove one of the cells for biopsy without affecting the eventual embryo. It appears that at this stage, the cells are totipotent, meaning that they can form any cell in the body. Soon after this, they become divided into mesodermal cells, ectodermal cells, and endodermal cells. Although they can still differentiate into specialized cell types, they do not go back to totipotent cells. They have acquired epigenetic marks. They still continue to branch off into different specialized cells, and hence, as the fetus develops, many different cell types are produced, which most of the time remain true to their specialized development. some of the epigenetic changes become fixed, like the liver cells dividing into other liver cells, for the most part. However, even mature liver cells can become slightly different depending on the cellular environment. We can understand that these cells have undergone epigenetic changes. They all have the same DNA, but now some of the DNA has been silenced, most of the time permanently. Let's say some may divide into skin cells, but they are capable of many different types of skin cells. Portions of the DNA in these cells are silenced, but even as an adult, some skin cells can change their properties. In other words, epigenetics is continuing in these cells. Some regions of the DNA are permanently silenced, other regions can be modified by the cellular environment and turned off or on. Epigenetics is a wide-ranging subject, which is intricately involved in what it means to be human, almost as much as DNA. The main mechanisms may be methylation of DNA and acetylation of the histones, but there are many more interactions with the DNA that determine what is expressed. The 98% of the DNA that does not code for specific genes is not just sitting there. Different types of RNA are formed that do not result in protein formation, but rather is used to control what is expressed. Your body is constantly making adjustments in the expression of the DNA in response to environmental clues. Back to diet and health. The main factor affecting your internal environment is your diet. It affects your proteins, enzymes, hormones, and growth. This is something you can control, that is, what you eat, and thus can adjust your diet to maintain health. I have contended that the primary driving factor behind obesity, diabetes, and prediabetes is insulin resistance. This means it takes more insulin to do the same job. Since there is nothing wrong with the insulin, the problem is with the insulin receptors. This is an epigenetic change that you can modify with the proper diet. Do not get me wrong, I am not saying I can cure diabetes through diet, but we may be able to prevent type 2 diabetes. I reflected in the Diet and Health book that this is initiated by higher and more numerous surges of glucose and insulin in the body as a result of the changes in the food we eat and how we eat. What I really meant is that we are affecting epigenetic changes by eating the modern Western diet such that the receptors are not working as well or are not as numerous. This is a simplification. For the receptors not to work as well may require modification of many proteins, enzymes, and processes in the cell. Having a poor diet may take a long time to eventually manifest the adverse changes you have, and you do not get fat overnight, just like you do not get type 2 diabetes overnight. Some of these epigenetic changes may be able to be reversed by changing the environment. Some may be more permanent. I have told you how the epigenetic changes manifest themselves in the DNA, and we can measure the amount of methylation of different genes and correlate this to changes in the expression of the production of proteins associated with different genes. But we still do not know why this occurs. Once we knew that if we drank water from this well, you got sick. We did not know why you got sick. We did not know anything about bacteria or disease or sanitation. That did not keep us from telling people not to drink this water. I do not know how the cellular environment induces methylation or acetylation of DNA to occur. We can identify some of the proteins involved, but do not know the whole process. We can examine the DNA of the adults from the Dutch famine and quantify changes in the methylation patterns in the DNA of certain genes. But that is a long way from knowing how to modify epigenetic changes. I do not need to know any of that to tell you what your diet should be. I know what mankind used to eat, and I know how this has changed in the last couple years. I know that type 2 diabetes used to be uncommon. Now I know we have an epidemic of obesity and diabetes. I have told you that abnormal insulin surges over time induces insulin resistance. Now I can say this particular cellular environment induces epigenetic changes that affects the insulin receptors, which results in insulin resistance. I do not know all the proteins, RNA, or chemicals involved, but I do not have to know this to tell you how to manage your type 2 diabetes, prevent prediabetes from progressing, lose excessive fat, or what diet you should be on to prevent getting fat to start with. Now I must take a step backwards. I am not going to tell you to put an infant on a fat-losing diet or a low-carbohydrate maintenance diet or to undergo fasting. I am going to try to get you to understand why now we have an epidemic of childhood obesity and how we can prevent this from happening in some, or perhaps many, individuals. Okay, nothing in this podcast is medical advice, so I don't have to tell you I'm a retired physician and not giving you any medical advice. I am going to tell you that the way I make money is to sell my books and audiobooks, and that you could go to KellyGregg.com and easily figure out how to purchase some. This was podcast 2 in the series Fat Newborns, Infants, and Kids. There'll be several others, and for this particular series, I advise you to listen to the podcast in order.